morning. We are glad that you're here. If you could have seen the looks on the kids' faces at 10:15 when they were told they could go out, it's like Christmas came early. And some of you parents, you had a similar look on your faces when you learned the kids were going out. We wanted communion to be after the sermon this morning. We're going to end at the table. I had to slip out for a few moments, so I don't know if anyone pointed it out, but this is one of my favorite mornings with the praise team. We've got four of our youth group members who are singing with the praise team this morning, and we love you guys. You guys have done a great job, and we love the rest of the praise team as well. And Donnie's going to graduate from the youth group within a year or two, so we're getting close. We're getting close. If you have your Bible, open up to Luke chapter 12. And I'm going to start in verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, to the crowd, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." Did you know that up until 1954, the largest Coke that you could buy in a bottle came in at 6.5 ounces. 6.5 ounces, that's what you could buy in the bottle. Now, in 1955, Coke decided to mix things up a little bit. And so they came out with what they called their king size bottle. King size. Do you know how many ounces were in the king size of Coke? 10 ounces. Hold your hands up there for everyone to hear. 10 ounces, sometimes 12, which is confusing. I don't know why it would go back and forth. A lot of the bottles that you see were 10 ounces. That was the king size. In 1955, they also decided to come out with what they called the family size. In other words, this bottle is sized big enough for the whole family. Do you know how many ounces were in the family-sized bottle? 26. 26 ounces is how much they thought would provide for a whole family. Okay, when I was growing up, which was not the 50s, in case anyone is confused, the king size was considered the kid size. That's the low threshold, right? That's where you start, 10 to 12 ounces. Medium was 16 ounces in a cup, and 20 was considered a very generous large. And then 7-Eleven came on the scene, and they blew the whole concept out of the water. I see your 20-ounce large, and I raise you 12 ounces to give you the 32-ounce Big Gulp. Big Gulp was first introduced on the scene in 1976, the first branded 32-ounce drink. And it sold like gangbusters. Enough so that 7-Eleven decided, 32 ounces really isn't enough. So next came the Super Big Gulp at a more respectable 44 ounces, if you're only kind of thirsty. Then came the Double Gulp at 64 ounces, in case you need to stock up camel style to cross the desert or something. And then they came up with, I'm not making these names up, Extreme Gulp and Team Gulp. And then they just invited people to bring in their Home Depot bucket and 50-gallon drums. But the problem is, if you buy it that big, you've got to get it to your car. So here's a picture of someone actually trying to get their drink to their vehicle, which is not so easy. Okay, those last two were jokes, but what I'm about to tell you is not a joke. And that is, by the time I was in college, I had a bit of a drinking problem when it came to soda consumption. I grew up in a house where we did not have a lot of soda around the house. So when I made it to college, all bets were off. And I had the meal plan, and in the school cafeteria, there was self-serve, all-you-could-drink soda. And I could drink a lot of Dr. Pepper. I could put that down like it was going out of style. And during my college years, I also ate a lot of McDonald's, quarter pounder with cheese. Now, let me just pause right there and say, I was young, my taste buds weren't fully developed, I was immature, so don't judge me on my McDonald's consumption. But during college was when during the time when they came out with the value meal. And I could get a quarter pounder with cheese value meal for $2.99. But around my senior year of college or first year of grad school, McDonald's started to do something that was really sinister. And that was, after you purchased your value meal, they would ask you one simple little question. And do you know the question they asked? Do you want to supersize that for 39 cents more? Do I want to supersize my fries and drink for only 39 cents? Do you even have to ask? Can you start a list in the back where when I order, you don't even ask, just assume, yes, absolutely, I would like the glutton special. Give it to me. For only 39 cents, I will take it. And this was during the time when a gas station near our university would have all fountain drinks on sale for 69 cents. Any size, 69 cents. Which means when you go to the self-serve, you could choose the 12-ounce, but why would you choose the 12-ounce? And you could choose the 20, and you could choose the 32, but they had a 64-ounce cup bladder buster available. And every once in a while, they had the 84-ounce bathtub size, and it was the same price as the 12-ounce. Why would anyone in their right mind not go for the 84 ounces? And so I always went for the biggest cup available. And not only did I go for the biggest cup available, but I did this number where you fill it not only to the brim, but where any sudden movement and that thing is spilling over. And then what do? When it's self-serve, are you like me, where you pull it to your mouth, you take off the top ounce or two, and then you put it back in just to make sure that that 84-ouncer is really coming out at like 85, 86. Why wouldn't I drink all the soda I could in an all-you-can-drink free refill cafeteria? And why wouldn't I supersize every opportunity I got if it was only 39 cents more? And why wouldn't I get 89 cents if it was the same cost as 69 cents? The price is the same, right? Or is it? It didn't take the movie Supersize coming out to teach me what happened to my body when I ate fast food endlessly and I supersized everything. It took several years and going through several pant sizes and a serious talk with my dad, who developed type 2 diabetes, adult onset diabetes, and really struggled from a lot of health problems that came from that before it finally started to hit me that free refills of endless sugar doesn't always mean there isn't an expense. And 12 ounces or 84 ounces at the same price doesn't always mean that the cost is the same. And I tell you this not to tell you what size drink you should have, because I still indulge in a big one every now and then, or how many fries that you could have, because I still love sometimes to indulge in fries, although David's Burgers fries are now my kryptonite. I've moved past McDonald's. And I don't know how long back, I moved from Dr. Pepper to Diet Coke, and it's got its own set of problems with it, and I recognize that, and so I've tried to scale that back just a little bit. And treating our body as a temple of God, that's a good conversation, but that's for another sermon. I bring my one-time out-of-control soda consumption up because it's one of a million examples I could use to describe the potential dangers of living in the most abundant nation in history. And I am grateful for all the blessings that come from living in our land of plenty, but I've also started to recognize that there is potential for excess at every turn. And I'm also still trying to learn the discipline of discerning in all areas of life when is enough. In the story I started with at the beginning, there is some man, a brother, and he pleads for Jesus to do what rabbis often did in the first century: arbitrate his family dispute. Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Some of you know Coleman Westbrook. He's the son of Kent and Johnny Westbrook, and he is a lawyer here in town, and he specializes in estate law, wills, inheritance, that sort of thing. And I've told this story before, but it's been quite a while. It's worth repeating. For a long time, whenever I would see Coleman, I would ask him one of those standard questions you ask people: Coleman, how's it going? And he would always give me the same answer every time. He'd say, well, Bert, people keep on dying, families keep on fighting, business is good. And what we see in Luke 12 is not much has changed in 2,000 years, right? Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Now, we could go into the Old Testament law, the Torah, and we could look at the ways that the inheritance was divided and how much the firstborn son got and how much consequent sons got and how the girls, unfortunately, were left out of the picture. But what's interesting to me, if you notice in the text, is Jesus doesn't dive into the specifics. He doesn't debate the merits of the man's claim. He doesn't try to determine, is he in the right or is he in the wrong? Because Jesus knows that whether this man was in the right or in the wrong, our stuff can cause all kinds of destructions in our relationships. Greed opens the door to all manner of problems. So Jesus has a warning, and it's not just to this man. It is to the thousands of people who have gathered around him. And his warning is this: watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. And we understand his warning. Watch out for greed. It can tear up families, and we've seen it. It leads to jealousy between friends. It leads to war between nations. History is littered with it. Be on guard against materialism and never-ending consumption and accumulation of more. And in fact, that's where Jesus goes immediately after this conversation. He tells the story about a rich man who keeps getting richer. His crops keep overflowing, and he soon realizes the barns I have aren't big enough to hold everything, to contain everything. So what does he do? He builds another barn and another barn and another barn. He just keeps on going. And soon he gets to the point where he's not sure God is necessary in the picture. And he dies. When is enough enough? It never ends well, Jesus warns, for those who store up things for themselves but are not rich towards God. And Jesus says something almost identical in Matthew 6:19. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Whether we like it or not, Jesus talks about money and materialism more than any other topic. And while we may hear his warning, it is so hard to heed his warning. None of us would just come right out and say it. No, Jesus, life does consist of an abundance of possessions. No, Jesus, it's better to hoard what we have and build bigger barns rather than help others. It's better to think that life is all about self-indulgence. Eat and drink and be merry and never think about God and never think about others. We don't say it, but as a nation, we sure do struggle with it. I want to show you a commercial. Some of you may remember. It was from about 10 to 15 years ago. Now, as a reminder, commercials were those little 30-second things that were kind of grouped together in the middle of TV shows, if you'll believe it. The quality of this commercial, the video quality isn't the greatest, but the message kind of packs a punch, so I want to show it anyway, and I think you'll enjoy. Let's watch together.
I'm Stanley Johnson. I've got a great family. I've got a 4-bedroom house in a great community. Like my car? It's new. I even belong to the local golf club. How do I do it? I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. I can barely pay my finance charges. Somebody help me.
Need a smart way to consolidate your debt? At LendingTree.com, banks compete, and you choose the loan that's right for you.
Okay, so it's a hilarious commercial. It is a relatable commercial. My only problem with the commercial is after the big punchline, how do I do it? I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. The problem I have with the commercial is the solution in the end. And the solution in the end is just debt consolidation, right? Which can help. If you had too many expenses and too many places and too much debt, you bring it all under one roof. Maybe take out a second mortgage on the home, which was before about 2007, when that seemed like a really good idea. But the problem with that commercial is the idea is just keep living at the way and the pace and the level that you're living. Just find a better way to bring all the debt together. Instead of asking some harder questions like, what's at the root of the problem here? because as a society, we consume more stuff than ever before, and we have more stuff than ever before, and our closets are bigger than ever before. And the closet still can't hold it all. And so we save some good attic space, but the attic can't hold it all. And so we use up part of the garage space where the car would normally go, and the garage can't hold it all. And so now there is a massive industry. Let's show the picture. These things weren't around 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And they're on every other street corner. And that's a great place to store stuff. I'm not knocking that, but maybe our problem isn't that we run out of places and space to store our stuff. Maybe we back up just a little bit more and say, we've got more stuff than we need. And we keep on adding to the number instead of subtracting to the number. Now, this may feel a little like a cheap shot to have a lesson on simplicity right before Christmas, but hang with me here. Maybe this is the perfect time to have a lesson on simplicity right before Christmas. Simplicity is not about an obligation to sell everything and live in poverty. And simplicity is not about denying the good gifts God has given us and refusing to enjoy some material goods. But simplicity is about constantly asking, when is enough enough? And then trying to act on it. Simplicity is about recognizing when our barns are plenty big. And the solution is to share more instead of build more. Simplicity is about uncluttering our houses and our closets and our calendars and our lives so that there is more space for God and others. And just to breathe, simplicity is about refusing to chase after stuff. It is about seeking first God's kingdom and His righteousness, and trusting that even when we don't get everything we want, God supplies us with our needs. So if this is something that you would like to grow in, I want to present just a few practices that you might consider adopting to grow in simplicity as we close. And one is to explore if there might not be some places where you would benefit from downsizing. Prayerfully consider where less might be more, where less time commitments, less expenses, a smaller mortgage or car payment, the kinds of questions the guy in the commercial should have asked. Instead of just saying, how can I get all my debt under one roof, he might ask, is my roof a little too big? Did I extend myself? Is this new car necessary? Or might I drive something older? Maybe it's time to back off of this membership or some of the other expenses. Because what you may find in simplicity is a greater freedom from stress and a reduction of hurry. And not only getting out from underneath some debt, but resistance to debt. And more time for family and greater space to seek first the kingdom. And the second challenge is this. Spend a little time reflecting before purchasing. Ask some simple questions. Can I afford this? But even if you can, do I need this? Do I have room for this? Is newer necessary? Is bigger really better? Is this purchase about fitting in? Does my desire come from envy? Is this feeding materialism in me or in my kids? Will this purchase prevent me from being generous to others? And the next is this: instead of storing it, Try sharing it. Loosen your grip on your stuff a little more. Clean out to give away, and not just the unwanted stuff and the worn out stuff, but even stuff that you value. And when possible, in the thinning out and cleaning out process, include the kids. I realize what I'm saying right there, and I know some of the best times to thin out is when they're out of the picture. Because there can be a toy that was hidden in a toy chest for 3 years, unseen and unplayed with, and the moment you pull it out to give it away is the moment that thing becomes the most valuable possession in the world. We've been there. I understand that. But what if there is a lesson that is not only for you, but for them, that says you've just gotten several nice things. Now let's see if we can't share some of your other nice things with some other people. Let's clear this out, not just to create space, but to create sympathy and compassion and generosity. And here's another challenge. If you can afford it, and I know there's times in your life when you can't, but if you can afford it, when you resell stuff at a garage sale or Ray Lana or online, try not to use that money to buy more stuff. And maybe instead use that money to share more, to invest in people. And here's the last one. Commit to learn contentment. In Philippians 4:11, Paul says, I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. And he goes on to describe that sometimes he learns that contentment when he has plenty, which is not always an easy lesson to learn, because I've discovered no matter how much people have, someone else has more. And it sure seems tempting to have what they have. He says, I've learned to be content during those times when I had plenty and during those times when I had very little. Contentment can be learned. And for Paul, it's all about leaning on the God who gives him strength, the one who reminds him of all the good gifts he already has, the one who says, I will be with you when you seek first the kingdom and my righteousness. So that's my encouragement to you. At this time, we're going to close at the table. And so I want to ask those who are going to serve to go ahead and head back to the back and be ready. We wanted to end this morning with a time of communion with Jesus as our host, because we remember in this very simple meal the one who is the giver of all good gifts, the one who is the sustainer of life, the one who offers real joy and ultimate fulfillment, the one who says, in me you are not alone, you have this wonderful family. We remember Jesus as we come to the table because Jesus is the host. And he says, I am the bread of life. Feast of my life, and you will be sustained. That is where life is found.